And welcome into the Monday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. Jim has already hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 10 minutes ago, he was listening to I Can't Go For That, No Can Do by Hall & Oates. So hard to start your day much better than that. Way to go, Jim. Joe Rexroad, what's going on? How are we doing? This is extended mute from Rexroad. Michelle, how are you doing? We'll get Rexroad figured out.
I'm doing good, Rob.
Oh, yeah, I don't think that's a mute. Sorry. Yeah, that's not a mute. That's Robo Joe in action already.
Robo Joe in action very early on this morning. Michelle, how are you doing this morning?
Doing good, guys, this morning. Actually pretty warm out. Not too bad in Nashville. Also,
not bad.
Before I forget, I have to give a quick shout out. Grandpa turned 92 yesterday. Big birthday in the books.
Very nice. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. That's good stuff. Nice addition of courtside with Campbell and Knezovic on Saturday morning. And later that day, you had a Kentucky win to discuss.
Robbie,
Kentucky gets it done against Alabama.
I was stressed, actually. So Elijah and I were in studio, and Nick, our intern, too, he was there also. We were watching the game. We watched the first half, and they were down by 10, and they had their backcourt was out. And I was like, oh, gosh, here we go. It's happening again. It's all happening again. And then, you know, they made a run. They were leading at halftime. It was pretty crazy. And then they ended up winning by 10, and I was very, 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 very happy.
There were some big shots in that game. I got to catch like the tail end of that game for Kentucky against Alabama, and Kentucky made some big shots coming down the stretch. That's a big win, and John Calipari talked about that after the game. He said, you know, maybe the Kansas win, number one, the way they played against Tennessee at home, number two, but that one against Alabama right there, well, it's a pretty big win for your Cats, I will say.
Wow, Rob, I really appreciate the Kentucky basketball love this morning. Also, I don't know if you heard, but I gave major shout-outs to you and Joe at the beginning of courtside, talking about how I'd wear the orange this week or last week. So, oh, you did hear.
Absolutely. I absolutely heard. Director, do we have you back in the program?
Okay, I've moved much closer to my grandma's router. Of course, now this means that my son on the couch over here is about to, he's about to be a participant in the show.
Sorry, Jack.
Yeah, he'll be fine. But I missed whose birthday is it? The shout out.
My grandpa. Well, it was yesterday, but 92.
Oh man, awesome. Happy birthday.
Good stuff.
They got lost in cyberspace for me. So I think it's good. no robo on your end.
No, you're good.
No, you're good, okay. Joe.
It's good stuff.
There we go.
The Vols lose to Arkansas on Saturday, which I thought was a little predictable heading into that game. We talked about it in Call Your Shot Friday and weekend winners on Friday. Vols fall in Arkansas. Joe, I'll be honest with you. I watched about 9 to 10 minutes of that game, and that's all that I could stomach watching that game. Between the offensive fouls, the charges left and right, the poor shooting, I guess you could call it really good defense. I couldn't do it. Could not do it on Saturday.
It was, yeah, I mean, you know, look, these are not the best. The college basketball has these games sometimes where, you know, it is defense, but it's also the inability to overcome good defense and just make shots, which is what you still see at the next level. But the officiating in this game was the thing that, to me, made it hardest to watch. Yeah, it's a broken record. It's a broken record for me at this point. I'll tweet about it during the game. I'll cry about it. Sometimes on here, I'll cry about it. You know, if an offensive player elevates or, it, you know, is on his way to the basket and a defensive player slides into where he's going to land, you cannot reward the defensive player with an offensive foul. And yet that's rewarded, I don't know, 80% of the time. I mean, it's infuriating. It actually makes the game more dangerous. It makes the game a lot less fun too. You know, essentially you're taking someone doing something athletic and you're rewarding the person for doing pretty much the least athletic thing you can do, which is just go stand somewhere and fall over.
Yep.
I don't know why we can't get to a point where college basketball is officiated like the NBA. where, you know, look, if you get in position or if an offensive player is out of control, this is great. I mean, you know, offensive fouls have a place in the game. In college basketball, it is, and they still added the flop rule, and it still doesn't matter. They have the flop rule that, so they'll, every once in a while, they give you a flop warning in a game where they just got suckered in on like eight flops. It's just, it's maddening. And that game was, and certainly it was, you know, in this particular instance, the Vols got hit with it more, you know, and look, it's also a home court thing too. It really is. I mean, these block charge or the close out of bounds stuff, how often does the official go with the home team on that? I think a way too much. So it's got to get better, but it's not very good.
It's got to get better. And that was kind of the theme from Rick Barnes after the game. Said, quote, there was just no flow to that basketball game whatsoever. None. And Rick Barnes later says, quote, I hope they got those calls right. I do. I really do. I really, really do. That was the quote from Rick Barnes at the end of the day there.
And look, say what you want to say about Rick Barnes. He very rarely talks officials.
He does.
I mean, he very rarely talks officials. I can't remember too many instances of him even bring. Usually, it's like, yeah, there was a couple calls that didn't go our way, but you know, if they lost a game, you know, that, you know, we got to overcome that. But this was like actually visibly agitated by the refs.
Yeah. So Tennessee falls to Arkansas. We'll see if they can respond later this week and get back in the winning ways. Big win for Vanderbilt over the weekend as well. How about the Doors? Their 14th win of the year.
Well, yeah, it was a big win because they were up 10 in the second half on Texas A&M. They give up the lead and you know, then they have to come back, make some huge plays. Liam Robbins, 14-8. So now you start, there's the offense. I mean, he makes a difference. Pippen 24, but you know, even like Tyron Lawrence with some huge steals, Jordan Wright with a big time step through bucket. So look, 14-10, 6-8, they got a real chance, one, to not be playing on the first day of the SEC tournament.
Yep.
They're, which would be a big deal. And I think they got a, you know, I think they needed to win at least one of Tennessee or Auburn on the road for anybody to really talk bubble. I mean, anybody could make a run here in Tampa, you know, and make a run toward a bid. But I think the NIT is a real strong possibility now. And that would be good for that team. Certainly overachieving relative to being picked last in the SEC.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And then you have Auburn starting to struggle a little bit. They were in a, you know, just a fight with Georgia last week. Vanderbilt started off really well against Auburn. Auburn ultimately pulls away in that game. And then they fall and go down to Florida, a Florida team that has been really inconsistent this year. Florida gets a big win. And, you know, they weren't even in the first four out, according to most people in this game. They were in the next four out. And then Florida gets this big win against Auburn. That's a huge win for the Gators, and it looks like Auburn's teetering a little bit, especially when they go on the road. Two shaky performances on the last two games on the road in Georgia and Florida.
Yeah, when they get it rolling, they are fun, and they are overwhelming at times. I mean, they got possibly the number one pick, and they've got, I think, a pretty good chance at a lottery pick in Walker Kessler, and then a lot of other talent. Their guards are, you know, it's just, you can see where one bad day in this NCAA tournament, it could end early for them. You know, those guys are a little bit out of control at times. And then defensively, they're like, especially if they don't have Kessler on the floor, I think he erases a lot of mistakes on defense for them. So they got a lot of things to figure out going down the stretch, but that's huge for Florida. I mean, Florida now, that's the type of thing really for the SEC, you know, it's like you're helping one of your bubble teams get in maybe. They got new life on the NCAA tournament front for sure.
Did you see the brawl after the game yesterday between Michigan and Wisconsin? That was that was pretty nuts. Greg Gard and Juwan Howard meeting together in the post-game handshake line, and they start jabbering at each other, and all of a sudden everyone gathers in, and Juwan Howard is taking swings at a Wisconsin assistant coach there. And before you know it, there's a full-scale brawl out there between Michigan and Wisconsin. That was quite something. And the reaction to Juwan Howard has not been great since that game.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think he deserves, you know, plenty of criticism and reaction. And this isn't the first time for him. Last year, he totally lost it about Mark Turgeon, at the Big Ten tournament. I mean, he's in a little bit of not being able to control himself here in some of these moments. But I've also seen a lot of people say he should be fired. I don't agree with that. Like, I've seen a lot of people make the Woody Hayes comparison. Woody Hayes close fist punched a player.
Yeah.
Several times, you know, like that. That's not the same as basically what he did was slap a Wisconsin assistant coach. He should be and he will be suspended. I don't see how this is fireable or really apples to apples at all to like Woody Hayes. It's setting a bad example for sure. And it just, you know, I also feel like there's some people who are saying like Greg Gard is equally responsible. To me, it looked like Greg Gard was just kind of trying to explain himself because Juwan Howard was basically walked by, said something to him, and Greg Gard said, hold on, because it was all about this timeout late. Called a timeout late because Michigan was pressing late. Now, look, could you still just say whatever, inbound the ball, if they steal the ball, they can score. You know what I mean? Is it really that important? No. But Michigan, usually the other team that's down double figures at that point, backs away and says, fine, let them inbound the ball, dribble out, let's get home. And they were still pressing, so he called a timeout to reset the 10-second, and they wouldn't, you know, what that whole thing is. I just, it's not worth the anger that resulted from it, you know. But then there's always, you know, you don't know what all goes on, or if there's other had been past issues, or what was said by Krabbenhoff, and you know, who knows? There's a lot to pick through. But John, you can't do that. You can't do stuff like that at all. And then you got some serious swinging from some players. You're going to have some Michigan players and possibly Wisconsin players suspended here too.
Oh yeah. I don't think there's any question about it. I think there will be some suspensions coming. I would not be surprised to see that today from the Big Ten. So we'll see what happens on that front. We are off and running today here on Robbie and Rex Road, taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com 615-737-1025. When we come back, is it time to be concerned about the Nashville Predators after they drop yet another game over the weekend? We'll get into that coming up on the other side. You can add a little excitement to your sports watching experience and make every moment more by betting on all the action on FanDuel Sportsbook. There's a reason why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook. The app is simple to use. They've got great odds on all different betting markets, fun bet types like the same game parlay, and exclusive always-on promotions such as enhanced odds boosts on the biggest events to let you get more action out of every game day. And I said, the Predators, it's NHL season. They got a big game coming up against Florida on Tuesday. I think I'm going to go with the Panthers in that game, but you take it any way you want to take it. Just place a bet on any game. FanDuel will refund you up to $1,000 back if this is your first time betting on FanDuel Sportsbook. If you've never tried FanDuel Sportsbook, what are you waiting on? Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Get started using promo code Rob so they know that I sent you. Once again, that promo code is Rob. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. Refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. Right now, there are deals from everything from half off the Woodhouse Spa, half off dining at the Mainstay and Hard Rock Cafe, half off the Brooklyn Bowl, plus $50 free with a purchase of $100 in downtown dollars. You can check out all of Nashville's best deals now at thegamenashville.com/deals. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. Joe, another tough loss for the Nashville Predators over the weekend. They fall 5-3 in Carolina. It was a game where they just couldn't get much going offensively for the most part, and Carolina was suffocating like they typically are. They're up 4-1 in the game. All of a sudden, you turn around and the Predators have some fight. They make it 4-3, and then Carolina adds an empty netter as well. So that is now four consecutive losses for the Nashville Predators. And, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about how, according to MoneyPuck.com, the Predators had around a 95% chance to make the playoff. They've dropped four games since then, have come out of the All-Star break, and that percentage has dropped down to 61.7. So you've gone from about a 95% chance to make the playoffs to 61.7%. You're still sitting in a decent spot if you're the Predators, but you've dropped four in a row. You look at the standings right now. I mean, you're holding on to that first wild card spot by a point against LA at the moment. And you're now 4 points up on the Stars, who dropped one yesterday against Arizona. Anytime you drop one against Arizona, that's not good. So the Coyotes gave the Predators some help yesterday. But Joe, at this point, what's your concern level now that the Predators have lost four consecutive games and they've got the red hot Florida Panthers staring them in the face coming up on Tuesday?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't know if I can put a number on it. Like on a scale of 1 to 100 concern level right now, I guess I'd put it, you know, right around the middle, right in the 50s. I don't think it's – I mean, look, they've played a tough schedule. They came out the break. They have had some issues to work out. Teams go through streaks. They go through winning streaks. They go through losing streaks. Unless you're an overwhelmingly good team, you're going to have a couple rough patches in a season. I think the concern level is, you know, that they, like, there's no rest here. You know, now you get Florida after this. We talked about it last week. This is going to be a heck of a stretch. You better get those home games. Better get that home game against Washington. Didn't do it. Played well, really. Probably that's probably the best game they've played of the bunch here.
I agree.
But didn't get it done. And I mean, look, Thursday is going to be huge. Whether they win or lose against Florida. But I say it gets a little bit more intense with Pecorino night and everything else that goes with it. You know, if they're sitting there carrying a 5-game losing streak into this game, which the way they're playing and the way Florida's playing, certainly that would be you know, that would be the thing that would be expected. So it's getting to the point where, you know, you've got to figure out a way to get a win. I mean, I think either way, Thursday is going to be – and that's just going to be an interesting thing. Again, you get Stadium Series right after that, and you have all the pomp and circumstance of this game. How does this team, you know, handle that? Does that all energize them, or does that become a big distraction?
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Ryan from Hermitage, who wants to weigh in. Ryan, thanks for calling into Robbie and Rex Road.
Morning, guys. If you look at the past teams they've been playing, take away Dallas, all the teams have one thing in common. They're all fast. They're all get to the net, get as fast as you can to the net. Fred Ball's Nick Cousins and who they fought Cole Smith. That's not going to cut it right now if you're in the losing streak. I know Hines likes his size guys, but to play, you need someone to play Thomasino, you know, has a skill aspect. Cody Glass is doing good. Rocco's doing good. You know, you need some scoring on this team. Physicality is just not working anymore with these teams because they're just skating right past them, and Frederick is looking crazy on the ice trying to catch up.
Hey, thanks for the call, Ryan. We appreciate it. I mean, look, I don't know that that's the direct issue that they're dealing with right now. I mean, I do think that they have played some fast teams. Carolina is a fast team. I think part of what makes Carolina hard to handle is they are fast and they are physical, and that we talked about that on Friday, you know, heading into the game. The way that Carolina plays the game, they're tough to handle. I will say, and, you know, Alex Doherty of A to Z Sports has been beating this drum too, and I agree with him. I think it's time to move Philip Tomasino around and see what he can do with some skilled players, because if you take a deep dive into the numbers, Tomasino is doing a pretty good job of creating chances, and he's played on the fourth line for the most part. Like, they got to find a way to get some goals going right now, because, you know, Philip Forsberg hasn't scored. Excuse me, he did score the other night. So it's one of those things now where they've got to find a way to get consistent offense going. We've talked about the Johansson line at nauseam. They got to find a way to get him going at 5-on-5 and play some, you know, some wingers with him that can give him a consistent chance to be productive. I don't know that the problem is Cole Smith. Now, you know, Ryan brought up some guys. Cody Glass is playing well down in Milwaukee. Rocco is playing really well down in Milwaukee as well. I'm not going to rule it out that we could see, you know, one or two of those guys come up as they move down the stretch here. But I think it's more about, number one, the penalties. You still got to stop taking them. The penalty kill when you have taken penalties has not been as good lately as it's needed to be. And number two, like, you've got to find a way to dig deep at this point. The question that I have is this just a bad patch that they're going through right now? Or is this maybe turning into what they really are going on right now? That's the question I want to know the answer to.
Yeah, well, and I've certainly seen some people say, oh, see, it was all a mirage. I feel like what they've done this year, you know, over 50 games or so, or, you know, what they did over the first 45 games. Again, they had, it wasn't all the same thing. They had some patches. I think that's enough of a sample size to look at that and say, okay, that's what they are, right? I don't think they've been playing way above their heads here this season. I just think a lot of things have worked out for them. Now, the one thing there is, and we said it during the good times too, is okay, are the top guys going to keep producing like that? That's obviously a necessity. But I think you're on to something for sure. Like they, and we've talked about this too, even when they were winning, okay, you got to get that secondary scoring going. I mean, some of their best hockey this year has been played, you know, like with Elliot Tolvin, and producing very little. I mean, he just hasn't produced much. But Tomasino, that's an interesting idea and point. I mean, what would be the downside of doing that, of trying him up there at this point?
Well, I think the downside is I don't know that he's ready yet defensively. I mean, he's still and I talked about this the other day. I think you're getting close to the point where this is the time of year where you start to get pushed around a little bit if you can't bring that physicality to the table. And hey, look, it's just I've made the Forsberg comparison a lot. They're two completely different players. But early in his career, when Forsberg came up, that was kind of the problem, was he got pushed around in the D zone. He couldn't win puck battles on the wall. And, you know, I think Tomasino has done a decent job with that so far, but you can tell that, and Poyles talked about this on, you know, his interviews with Darren Dotnick and Chase, he's going to have to get bigger as they move forward here. And that's not something that you can do, you know, right now, obviously in the middle of a season, and, you know, just go on this crazy workout routine, trying to get bigger while you're playing hockey every other night. Like that's pretty hard to do at this point.
That's what Tannehill did that week against the Dolphins, though.
That is true. You know, one-fingered push-ups on the sideline. Yeah, it's good stuff. Right. Maybe that's what, you just get Tomasino out there and doing, you know, curls on the bench before he's getting to his next shift. That'd be good stuff.
Exactly. Before you go home, Phillip, back to the weight room, you know?
Yeah, go PK Subban style. Get done with the game and then just go do a full workout after the game's over as well. But, you know, I'd like to see it. I'd just like to see for an extended period of time, you know, what does he look like higher up in the lineup? And if it doesn't work, you can move things around the way that you need to move them. But I would like to see what he could do. And maybe he provides a spark. I mean, I think it's pretty clear the ability is there. Like he does a lot of things really well. He's not perfect. There's a lot he's going to have to work on, especially this offseason as they move into next year. But the vision is there. I think the foot speed's there. I think the playmaking ability is there. I'd like to see what it looks like for an extended period of time up top.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, that's worth the look. And I mean, who knows? Maybe look, if it keeps going in the wrong direction, there will be some shakeups, whether that's just within the lineup or actually, you know, different players in the lineup. But again, there's still, to me, also just too many mistakes that are being made. And that's where, I mean, I know that, you know, you can easily glaze over when people talk about correctable mistakes. You know, it's all correctable. Okay, well, you know, you keep making the same mistakes. But it does feel like some of their issues here during this losing streak are things that they can take care of. They can clean up, right? They should be able to.
Yeah, I think so. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025. Will in Kentucky texting in says, it's a bad patch when you hit the post as much as they have. Luck is not on their side. Let's hope they find a solution before Thursday and Saturday. This is coming from Will on the text line.
Well, yeah, and that's a good point too. I mean, how many did they hit? Yeah, they hit a couple early against Carolina for sure. So it's just, you get into a thing and it's like everything, it just seems to break your way when you're winning. And then it's just the opposite when you're losing. So I feel like everybody's just conceding tomorrow night as an L, and then it's like, okay, the season starts anew on Thursday.
What's your concern level on the Nashville Predators? Hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll continue that discussion on the other side. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio, taking your thoughts on the Nashville Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025. Your concern level with the Predators now that they've dropped four games in a row, they've got the Florida Panthers coming up tomorrow as well. Joey had John Hines on the show last week, and he made it sound like David Rittich might get one of the next two games leading into Carolina and Florida as well. Saros goes against Carolina on Friday. Do you think that the Predators should throw out David Rittich against on Tuesday against Florida, or with the situation being what it is, you've lost four games in a row, do you just have to trot UC Saros back out there? How do you think the Predators should handle this coming up on Tuesday?
I mean, I'd probably go Saros because you've had rest, and then you got rest for the next game too. But I also, I mean, his answer to us kind of told me that they've really thought hard about next month and what's coming and how maybe there's just a benefit to giving them a couple nights off here and there, even when they're not obvious nights off. So, look, they need a shakeup too. I don't think that they need a shakeup in goal. They need him in goal, but I don't think it's outrageous to do this, to go with Rittich tomorrow. If it was me though, I would probably go with UC Saros on every back to back as well.
Yeah, you know, play him every game.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I don't know. I guess we should expect that though. Then, huh? Is that right? Should we expect Rittich tomorrow?
I mean, he said one of the next two games. I just wonder if the result, like to me, I know that if I'm the coach, with the results being what they are, you've lost four in a row, and at that point, Saros would have had three full days off before the game coming in. Like, it'd be pretty hard for me to not play UC Saros, especially against this team, which, if you do kind of a deep dive on some of the numbers, Florida is – they're one of the best offensive teams we've seen in the league in a long time. Like, they're really good. They just hung up six on Minnesota. Like, they're pretty darn good. Hung up five against Chicago. Florida's offense is pretty elite. So, I mean, look, at some point, David Rittich's going to have to play, and he's going to have to play against some good teams at some point. I would go Saros again on Tuesday. I'd probably go Saros the rest of this week, and then – you know, next month is what it is. You know what the schedule looks like if you're the Predators. But I'd probably go Saros the rest of the week. That's just me. I'm interested to see how they handle that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, Florida, the way that they can light teams up, you know, it's like, well, hey, David, how'd you like to take this one, buddy? Take one for the team, huh?
David, good luck to you.
I'm sure it won't be that bad.
Keith from Bowling Green on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I think they're just playing better teams. This is coming from Keith from Bowling Green on the text line. And look, there is some of it. Let's go through the losses that they've had. You lose to Washington, you lose to Carolina. I think you can make the argument both those teams are better than the Predators. I don't really make that argument for the Stars and the Jets, though.
Right.
But I think certainly the last two, and certainly tomorrow, I mean, you can make the case that all three of those teams are better than the Predators.
Yeah. But right, like the Jets are not, and the Stars are right there trying to creep into your neighborhood, and they're getting closer, although they lost last time out. And let's not pretend like the Preds built their record just on patsies either. I mean, they beat all kinds of good teams this season in building their record. So there's, you know, they're not playing as well. And that's the bottom line. With some bad luck here and there and some good opponents here and there, but they got to play better.
They've got to play better. And it's always interesting, like when teams go through this, because I think we've talked about all season long how mentally their makeup is night and day different than what it was a couple of years ago. And when things started to snowball bad, you know, near the end of Peter Laviolette's tenure and in the first part of Hines's tenure, things went really poorly. Like, I don't really think there's a mindset problem right now with this group. But I do wonder, when you go through kind of an extended stretch now of results not going your way, this team really hasn't had to deal with that much this season. How do you handle that as you move forward? Now, some of it is you can handle it fine and the team across from you may just be better. Like, I think there's absolutely a scenario where the Predators play pretty well tomorrow and they still lose because Florida's that good. Like, I think that absolutely could happen. So how do you balance that if you're John Hines of, all right, you know, looking for the effort that you want, looking for the execution that you want, and just trying to go out there and win the game? Like, I feel like tomorrow is probably going to take a superhuman performance from UC Soros just based on the way Florida plays the game.
Well, the flip side to all this is if you do go in there and play your best game and, you know, go terrorize people on the boards and win puck battles and, you know, and win a game, what does that do for you? You know, yeah. If you go beat that team on the road, there's a, you know, you can look at it like an opportunity to quickly kind of hit the switch and start going the other way. So easier said than done. I know it's easy to right now be dubious about that happening the way things are going, but it's not like they couldn't go in and beat Florida.
No. And I would think that the desperation level is starting to kick up a little bit if you're the Predators, because, you know, you're now in a race. I mean, before the All-Star break, they were in a race, but they were pretty clearly in a playoff spot at that point. I mean, LA's right behind you. The good news is about the group you're in right now, you know, LA has played the same amount of games you have. Dallas is now only one game behind you. So those teams have started to catch up a little bit in terms of the games in hand. Anaheim's actually played two more games than the Predators, and they're 3 points behind the Predators. So teams have started to catch up in terms of games played. You know, Colorado's at 49, Minnesota's at 47, St. Louis is at 49. So you've started to not really have to worry about the games in hand as much anymore. Now you just got to get back to winning and collecting points. Like, especially in these Eastern Conference games, you know, if you get a point, that can end up being huge in those games. So this is a big week for them. I think you said it though, like regardless of the way the game goes against Florida, whether they win or lose or whatever, that game Thursday against Dallas, that's going to be a huge game. It's going to, and you know, Pecorine stuff aside, it's going to be huge for that anyway, but just the game itself and the 2 points and what that means coming down the stretch. Like, to me, you got to beat Dallas on Thursday. Right. That's the approach you've got to take.
Yeah. It's going to be, I mean, talk about an emotional night, you know, with everything all together. I think, just imagine if like Pecorine, you know, puts a Coors Light through a catfish too, you know. Is Taylor Lewan going to be there, by the way?
He might be.
I'm seeing Taylor Lewan walking around like the Reservoir Dogs with the Preds with a fish in hand. Like, is that going to be part of, or is that just part of the stadium series?
Could be both. Maybe he does, you know, kind of the podcaster out there chugging things off the fish. Who knows? Andrew from Dover texting in says, we need to sign Pekka to a one-day contract to play on Pekka night. We need an encore. This is coming from Andrew from Dover. I think if you're talking about, you know, leaving the stage outside of like winning a playoff series or winning a Stanley Cup, the way that Pecorine left the ice last year against Carolina, probably wouldn't mess with that. Probably just leave that one alone.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. No doubt about it. I mean, the interesting thing about this week with him is, you know, like personally, I would probably wait a little bit longer to retire a player's number, only because it's sort of like there's a lot of the same discussion that was just there a year ago when we didn't know, but we had an idea that he was going to leave. And then, like you said, like that last night, I mean, as of that last night, we still weren't sure. Right. And there was a lot of like, wait, but then it's like, how do you not retire after that? You know? But it's a lot of the same, you know, discussion about how much everyone loves Pecorine. It's going to be cool to have him back. I'm sure it will be a source of emotion for this team. Another thing about retiring a player's number, jersey number, whatever you do, you know, usually when you do that stuff, the current players on the team in question weren't teammates of his, you know? Yeah. I mean, usually it's like, oh, yeah, that old guy, he was great, wasn't he? I played with him as a rookie 1 year. I mean, you know, this is basically the same team he left last year. So that's kind of an interesting part of it, too.
Yeah, it is. I'm interested to see how that affects the game coming up on Thursday. Like, it's going to be emotionally charged. The building's going to be great. I think we know all that stuff. Does it affect the Predators positively out of the gate? Is it negative out of the gate? Are you maybe a little too hyped up out of the gate? I'm interested to see how that goes. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. How important is this week for the Predators in terms of the way David Poile may approach the trading deadline? We'll get to that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rex Road, how big do you think this week is when it comes to David Poile and his decision-making? And the reason I ask that is this. Obviously, you know, one way or the other, whether this week goes really well for the Predators or it goes extremely poorly, they're not going to be out of the playoff race. They're still going to be right there in the thick of the playoff race. But I do think part of what your decision-making process looks like as a general manager is, how do we stack up against the elite teams in the NHL? They've played well against some of those teams this year. They've gotten some big wins against Colorado. But as of late, you've gotten beaten by Carolina, got beat by Washington. They play Florida tomorrow. They play Tampa coming up on Saturday as well. And what we know is a big-time game for the Predators. Obviously, all those teams are in the Eastern Conference, so there's that part of it that you've got to separate as well. But if you're David Poile, how close attention are you paying to this week for the Predators when you're playing against really good competition? And how does maybe that affect your decision-making coming down the stretch as to either maybe what to do at the trade deadline, maybe more importantly, what not to do at the trade deadline coming up? This is, to me, if I'm David Poile, this is a pretty fascinating week.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. This is a great look at you against some of the best teams. I feel like there's going to be very little that pushes Poile toward anything but either a soft buy or a stand pat, or, you know, like, I guess unless you're talking about a complete collapse here, then I don't think there's going to be any kind of, and even then, like, I don't even know what that would look like. Even like, it would have to be an extraordinary collapse for there to be any thought of like being a seller or not looking to improve yourself maybe a little bit. I guess maybe if things were to go really well, does that make you think a little bit more like, gosh, if you could get one really good forward in here, maybe it's worth going out there and doing it. I just feel like right now things are right around that stand pat area to pick up, a little bit of help. I don't know what, because it's still, you can say, man, you know, this team just didn't match up with those top teams. And you can still say, yeah, but the tournament's different. The playoff hockey's different. This team's built for playoff hockey. I mean, you can talk yourself into all that stuff no matter what happens. And it just seems to me like David Poile would not be swayed into selling, at least.
Yeah, like I think the idea of maybe him going out and getting a big fish, the more time that passes, the less likely I think that is. Now, I could be wrong. And I think the only way that happens, like if you go out and get, you know, something that's going to cost you a lot, I think the only way that happens if you're David Poile is if they've got term left on their deal. Like the Claude Giroux of the world that has an expiring contract, like I don't see the Predators doing that. Now, could they do something like that for a rental player that's going to cost less? Yeah. Like, you know, I keep bringing up Cale Yarncroke. Like, could they go get Cale Yarncroke and spend a fourth rounder to get him and risk losing him at the end of the year? Yeah. I think that's something that may happen as they come down the stretch here. But I don't really see them getting into the mix with some of these big name guys coming down the stretch. What's interesting, I mean, we're a month away from today from the trade deadline in the NHL. So we're getting to the point now where the conversation is going to start to heat up, and we've already seen some trades. Tyler Toffoli goes from Montreal to Calgary. Toronto made a trade over the weekend. It wasn't a huge one. They send Nick Ritchie to Arizona. Ilya Labushkin comes in. So there's moves that are starting to get made here by some of these playoff teams. And a lot of times what that can do is maybe get GMs thinking that they've got to pull a trigger a little quicker than they normally would at that point. So, you know, David Poile's obviously been around for a long time. He's seen 100 different trade deadlines at this point. So I'm interested to see how he handles that. I feel like if you would have asked him 2 weeks ago, and he would never say this publicly, I felt like pretty confident they were going to buy something at the deadline, whether that's a depth forward, depth defenseman. I just wonder if it continues to kind of go this way and you're sliding throughout the rest of this week, you start to win some and keep yourself around the wild card spot as the deadline gets here, if he's just more willing at that point to say, you know what, I'm not spending anything. We're just going to see what this team has and we'll make our decisions from there. I mean, obviously the Forsberg part of this is the big thing he's got to take care of. So that's priority number one for David Poile. I think he's made that pretty clear. I just wonder if you're on the edge about this team and you don't know if they have, you know, what it takes to make a playoff run or to get into the playoffs and do any damage, if David Poile is willing to buy anything at all, even if it is a smaller piece.
Yeah. Well, get ready. If they lose all these games this week, a week from today, we're going to be right back to Poile's trading Forsberg, right?
Yeah. Well, some people are already there.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But like the thing is, if they get, I mean, right now, I guess they're already there, but if they're really on the fringe, you know, and they're fighting here with the Stars, and you know, you go the other side, you got the Kings right there, you got the Ducks. Although the Ducks, they have two games in hand on the Ducks, like you said earlier. But if you get that situation where you're really fighting for a spot, I feel like some kind of a pickup. I would expect that. I would expect some kind of an attempt to improve the team, to get yourself back over the line or solidify your position. And I know some Predators fans, and I get it, are like, okay, so you're buying right now when we're talking about, you know, just squeaking into the playoffs. But we've talked about that before too. How important is it to make the playoffs from a variety of perspectives? Very important.
Well, I think the other part you've got to keep in mind coming down the stretch here too is, for the most part, they've been relatively healthy. That's probably going to change at some point. Like, it's difficult for me to imagine them getting through, you know, the months of March and April with the amount of games that they're playing as healthy as they are right now. Now, you've got internal options that you can do if you really wanted to. So you've got, you know, Cody Glass, Rocco Grimaldi. They've got all kinds of guys down in Milwaukee that you can bring up on the back end. You've got Jeremy Davies. You've got David Ferentz down there. Like, there's different things you can do that we saw them do last year. But I also wonder if, like, part of your deadline strategy, if you're David Poile, is, all right, what do we think of our depth? If we do go through injuries, do we have enough depth to continue to make a push towards the playoffs? And if not, where is the depth lacking the most? Because honestly, like, if you felt like you needed a scoring punch in your top six or whatever, and you don't like any of the options that are there at the deadline, like, could you not just say, you know what, we're going to go down? Rocco Grimaldi scored 20. Down in Milwaukee. Like, could we not plug him in for a game or two and see how that goes? Like, I'm not going to put something like that past the Predators at this point. I just think the injuries that have not really bitten the Predators yet this year, which did last year, which is part of how we discovered some of these guys, I feel like that could be a factor coming down the stretch. And, you know, a month from now, you could be in a totally different spot injury-wise. And I think that affects the deadline too and the decisions that you make if you're David Poile, which is why I think most of the time, GMs, they like to see what's out there and strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah. Well, and that gets to the question of, like, the reasonable possibilities out there. Are they better than, like, a Rocco Grimaldi? Now, you know, obviously, I think Rocco doesn't fit in perfectly with the way John Hines likes to play. But he can give you a burst of speed and of scoring threat. So, it's just like your depth is important. I totally agree with you. And you're right. They've had pretty darn good luck this year. I mean, Forsberg had his little stretch early in the year, but it's kind of remarkable, especially the way they play, that they haven't had more injuries, and it is fair to expect more. But at the same time, you also, like, you're trying to build up your depth in your organization too, you know? And it's like, so are you going to start now? Are you going to trade a prospect, going to trade a pick or both, you know, to get a so-so player? I mean, that's, it's not easy. You know, it just does. It just feels like this team got to the point where, like, it's not an option to not be in the playoffs now, right? It's not, you know, even though a lot of people thought they wouldn't be going into the year. When you have the success they've had, you're kind of like how do you not improve yourself if you can? But again, there is still a whatever you want to call it, or kind of a rebuild or a replenishing of the organization going on at the same time.
Yeah. Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Got a texture that says this team is and will always be in that stay pat area with this roster and David Poyle at the helm. This team is and will always be in the stand pat area with the roster and David Poyle at the helm.
So they'll never get good or bad. Is that what you're saying? We're going to be okay always, perpetually.
I mean, I can roll through example after example of David Poyle not standing pat at the trade deadline. It's happened plenty of times. Yes. A lot of times it has not worked out, by the way.
That's true,
but
too.
It has happened plenty of times. Ryan in Nashville texting in says, if the Preds want to make the big splash and get a big fish with Term, they should go after Alex DeBrinket. He would be a great on the top line with Joey and Luke Cunnan. I find it hard to believe the Chicago Blackhawks would trade Alex DeBrinket to the Predators in their division, but maybe. We've seen crazier things happen.
Yeah,
division,
I mean,
trades happen.
You never know. It does. I mean, the Preds sent a first rounder to that same team for Ryan Hartman. So it is possible. And who knows? I mean, the Blackhawks, are they the biggest disappointment in the NHL this year?
They're up near the top, I think, for sure. I mean, certainly when you factor in both on the ice and off the ice, yes, they are. It's been a disaster of a year for the Blackhawks. I don't think there's any question. I'm interested to see, like, where does Fleury end up? Because I think he's going to get traded. I'm interested to see where he lands. We'll see what happens on that front. When we come back, we'll switch gears, get into the Titans. Are Titans fans conceding that the window to win is over for this team? Joe Rexroad and I will discuss that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.